You've seen the headlines. Bonds are making a comeback. But if you've ever tried to invest in bonds, you know what a clunky, complicated, broken experience it can be. That's why at Public, they took fixed income and fixed it. Now you can find, evaluate, and buy thousands of bonds with an investing experience designed this century. Add fixed income to your portfolio with corporate, treasury, and municipal bonds. Go to public.com/bondspodcast to get started. This podcast is sponsored by Public. Full disclosures can be found at public.com/bonds. Chat with Traders is sponsored by Trade the Pool. Are concerns about limited buying power, insufficient capital, or fear of losing your own money preventing you from advancing your trading capabilities? Trade the Pool is an online stock trading prop firm that offers funding for stock traders. Demonstrate your skills, trade their capital, and keep your profits. You can engage in intraday trading and now swing trading on Trade the Pool with any U.S. stock or ETF. The procedure is straightforward. Pay an evaluation fee, successfully complete the evaluation, and get funded. Visit tradethepool.com/chat to learn more.
Markets, speculation, and risk. This is the Chat with Traders podcast, hosted by Aaron Fifield.
What's up, friends? Welcome to the show. This year, so far, I have brought you some truly phenomenal traders, and that continues right here on episode 233. My guest is equities trader Kenny Sharkness, although some will know him better simply as Shark. While Kenny himself keeps a low profile online, anyone that follows S&P Capital has likely heard Mike Balafiore make references to Shark, as he's consistently one of the top performing traders at the firm, which he joined in 2010. Now, the areas we covered during this interview, I think will be of most interest to developing traders, those who are early on in their trading journey, but of course, there is something for everyone. We cover things like a slow start, gaining consistency, growing P&L, the positives that can follow from a blowout loss, complacency, expanding into additional strategies, and mindset. So there's quite a bit packed in here. As there are references to specific stocks and prices, as well as some talk of preparing for the year ahead, I will point out that this was actually recorded a couple of days before Christmas. Now, I know that probably sounds quite odd to hear. I've been sitting on this interview for 4 months, but it's just the way things have worked out with scheduling and ordering, etc. Anyway, I am now pleased to present from New York, Kenny Sharkness on Chat with Traders. If we could start by just going back in time a little bit, back to 2010, I think it was. Why did you want to become a trader?
I guess I wanted to become a trader because it seemed like something I'd like to do, really as straightforward as that. You know, as a finance major, I was looking for kind of the next step, and I always was into strategic games. I played poker. Played a bunch of video games in college, and I got a hold of Market Wizards and some other books, and I was like, wow, this is really something that could be up my alley. And I interviewed at a few brokerage houses, and I realized it was just cold calling and selling and that sort of thing that just wasn't me. And so then I dug into it a little bit more. I said, okay, you know, I'm going to try this out. Luckily had supportive parents that kind of supported me for the first year. I told them, you know, give me a year to figure this out. And, you know, luckily it worked out.
And at that point, had you gone down the route of trying to get yourself on a prop trading desk?
Yeah, I knew nothing at the start. And so I knew I needed to get some training. And so I looked around to places that had programs that taught you how to trade, and SMB was the one that I gravitated to and went through a few interviews and got the job. And, you know, at the time, it's different now, but we actually had to pay for the training, but then they would onboard you and give you an account to trade. Very small at the time, you know, and they give you more risk if you do well, but So I actually paid to start, you know, my first job out of college, which is, I would say, a little bit unusual, but it was also very beneficial because I knew nothing and I just got taught good habits from the get-go, and I didn't have to break any bad habits. And I think I started from a good footprint, basically.
So you hadn't placed any trades prior to joining S&B?
None.
None whatsoever.
I didn't even know what a bid ask level one, level two, anything really, when I first started.
Let's go through your early experience. So talk to me about that first year. You know, did you have a natural talent for this? Did you just hit the ground running, or what did it look like?
I mean, it's so long ago now, but I don't think I was some sort of savant or prodigy or any of that. I think what benefited me was having the right attitude from the get-go, knowing that I was going to suck and it was going to take a while. And my focus really was getting better and setting goals and making incremental progress and all the cliche things that really work. So, you know, the first year I think I just got my account green after 10 months, but the biggest benefit, and I guess the biggest service I did for myself, was never dig myself a hole trading super small 100 share lots until I really proved to myself that I had some consistency, I had some edge. And then from there on out, it was about just developing that a little bit further and scaling up and that sort of thing.
I think that's probably quite an important point you bring up there. You didn't dig yourself into a hole. So I'd like to just not gloss over that. I mean, how did you go about that? I know you said you just traded very small, but was there, you know, for someone else who's listening to this, who's just coming into trading, they might hear that, okay, don't dig yourself into a hole. I mean, what more to it is there?
Yeah, I mean, keeping your risk limits super small at the beginning is simple as that. Obviously, I'm at a firm and we have our risk limits there and there's a risk manager. And so it's a little bit different if you're trading on your own, but you can still set yourself risk limits and stick to it and never lose more than just a couple $100 in a day at the beginning. And usually at the beginning, especially when you're not trading well and you're down money, it's not something that you're just going to dig yourself out of. You just kind of take a step back, treat it as a little bit of tuition, and go about the next day trying to get a little bit better. So that was the biggest thing, was just keeping things super small until I had, you know, some sort of little, albeit track record, and then go from there.
Okay. When we spoke beforehand the other week, you said that your progress was very slow. And maybe a little bit too slow. Can you speak to that a little more?
Yeah, it's so funny looking back because it's definitely not a problem I have these days. But at the beginning, my biggest problem was scaling up. And so I say that because I think I could have been trading bigger, you know, year two, year three, year four, and making a lot more. But at the same time, it was probably beneficial to go incremental. So my psychology was always there, but that was a big thing. And what I did was I set goals to try to trade a little bit bigger, feel a little bit more uncomfortable in my trades, journaled about it, reviewed it each month, and then kind of just chipped away at it. And it seemed slow at the time, but I guess looking back, you know, I'm happy with the progress I've made, I guess.
I know it was 10 or more years ago, but can you recall what some of those goals were?
Sure. I mean, like I just said, maybe I wanted to make sure I felt uncomfortable in my best trades, meaning, you know, I put a little bit more size than I was used to, and, you know, crossed the line a little bit where I'd start to feel it. But I always was very good about setting goals. I would have a whole process of, you know, each month I would have a goal, and then I would drill that down to each day, and it would always be something process oriented, not P&L. So like I said, maybe I'm feeling uncomfortable in a trade, or maybe holding my winners a little bit longer with a system and following the system. And then I would grade myself on that stuff each day. At the end of the month, I would kind of see how I did progress wise and decide whether I wanted to kind of shift my next month's goal and my daily goal, and just chip away at things like that. And you know, there's all these books about goals. I forget the whole acronym. You know, you have to be measurable, attainable, blah, 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 blah. But you know, you got to set the goal and then set the steps that you're going to do to get towards it. And it's always slow progress, but you know, progress is made over time.
So it almost sounds like you kind of picked one thing each month and then almost like prioritize that.
Yeah, I would say it would maybe be three or four things for the month, but then it would just be one thing each day. And I thought that doing that, I'd get good, or I'd make improvements, I should say, on the one thing I was really focusing on, and be in my forefront of my brain each day. So I'd really be thinking about it, rather than having, you know, 10 goals, where I see some people do that and they're trying to work on 10 things at once, but they don't really do it in a disciplined way, or a way that's going to actually improve. They're just spreading themselves too thin. So I think, yeah, that was definitely instrumental, doing it the right way and just making progress one or two things at a time, and not trying to be a hero.
Can you speak more to the consistency part of this? Like, how did you gain consistency? I know that's probably quite a simple question or a very broad question, but you know, obviously as for new traders and developing traders, that is kind of like the ultimate thing, right? In the very beginning, is to get consistent. How were you able to develop consistency?
I mean, it really goes back to the same sort of thing. Just review, having a process to get better each day. It's good to be on a desk where you're seeing people that make money and you can emulate them a little bit. So you learn the setups a little bit better, rather than just going at it out of thin air. So, you know, you learn the setups, you think about what worked, what didn't each day. Why was it the way you traded it? Was it the market? Were your stops too tight? Did you not hold your winners? You know, then through that process, you see the mistakes you're repeating, you kind of attack those a little bit. You see what you do well, you try to scale that up a little bit. And you see what you do good in certain markets and what you do bad in other markets, and all those things, you just make little tweaks and little tweaks until your edge kind of comes into its own. And everyone's going to be different. Some people are going to trade, you know, 10-minute time frame. Some people are going to trade 2-week time frame. And I knew that I had to find what kind of worked for me. And that was a little bit more of an active style. And through that style, consistency was really important, because if you're day trading, you really want to try the best you can to pull some money out of the market each day. And obviously when you're swing trading or you're doing longer term investing, it can be a lot more up and down. So just making those little changes each day, and again, gets back to all this cliche stuff, but that's really what worked at the beginning for me.
What were some of those setups which you first started to trade and you found, you know, that started to work for you?
Oh man, I remember, it's kind of funny looking back, we used to sometimes find charts that were in a 5-cent range for like 30 minutes. And then, you know, that 5-cent range would break and you'd just play the break. And that actually would work a little bit back in the day, but algorithms have totally eliminated that stuff. But it's just funny thinking back. But I would have a bucket of things, and I would try to just pick up as much as I could from people that are doing well. So whether that be kind of a daily chart breakout, or, you know, a stock that was in play and was breaking the opening range, or opening drive setup where you'd have a stock that is doing a lot of pre-market volume and you would just get in the first move and try to kind of follow the tape a little bit. When I first started, I did a lot more on tape reading and really short-term stuff. And then over the years, I think that one has become more difficult with algorithms and other things, being more competitive. And two, I'm just, you know, too old for that. And three, it's just not as scalable. So my style has definitely adapted a ton over the years. But at the beginning, it was a lot more short-term, quick stuff.
Okay. We're absolutely going to get into more of what you're doing nowadays. But just sticking with this point of consistency, you know, the position you're in at the moment, I presume you interact with a lot of the junior traders at the firm. And I'm sure, you know, some of those traders are still trying to find their feet, still trying to find consistency. Mm-hmm. Is there any kind of theme or common, you know, stumbling blocks you've observed which sort of hinders their consistency?
You know, really everyone has their own thing. You know, some people go at it too fast, some people go at it too slow, some people don't hold winners, some people, you know, everyone has their own thing and their own obstacles, and they kind of have to attack it their own ways. I've seen it not work out for many a trader for a variety of different reasons. As far as commonalities, I mean, it's just about having a plan, being able to stick to it. All the, you know, really the psychology aspect, of course, is the most important. And so the ones that can kind of get their psychology under their feet and being able to deal with the ups and downs and still make the next trade the same way, even if the previous trade was a loser, and just really drill down on what triggers them and their psychology are the ones that are going to work out. I don't really have the one thing that I see across everyone that hasn't made it, if that makes sense.
It does, yeah.
That's what I would say there. I think everyone has their own issues, their own demons, and it's about finding them out and attacking them.
Let's get more into growing profitability. So I think you said, you know, that first year, by the end of it, you did manage to be slightly green on the year. Mm-hmm. But what was it like after that point? How quickly were you able to ramp up, you know, your daily P&L numbers?
Oh man, it took a while. But every year was a little bit better. And then the numbers, I would pretty much grow seemingly at the similar, you know, kind of make double the previous year for many years. That was just about making my goals about trading bigger. And like I said, it wasn't really as fast as I wanted things to happen, but I did it in a way that never messed up my psychology. And then really, I think the turning point to really turning it up a little bit was when KBIO. I know a lot of people have talked about that one in the past probably. And I took a really big loss on that trade, like 10 times bigger than any other loss I had taken. And then just seeing myself dig out of that within a couple months, you know, I think at that point I was like, man, it's just not that bad. Like, if I can deal with that, my risk tolerance grew so much at that point, I think. And then if you go even further, taking some more big losses and coming back, you just build that resiliency over the years. And then you make a little bit of money and it just becomes a little bit easier, to deal with some of the swings.
Okay. So if that KBIO trade was a bit of a pivotal moment, what year was this? This must have been like 2018,
I don't even remember.
17, like it was a while back, right?
Yeah, something like that. Maybe I half erased it from my memory. I don't remember.
PTSD. What was how come you took such a big loss on that? You know, 10 times bigger than what you normally would accept.
Well, you know, I did all the cardinal sin things there. I remember it was a bankruptcy stock that was trading like 250, and I was shorted because the parts were worth 50 cents or something, but it was a low float. And then Martin Shkreli came in, did a reverse merger, and then it started squeezing after hours. And instead of just eating my loss, even though it kind of skipped up $2 before I could get out, I, tried to do the add game. And then, you know, it went from 2 to 10 to 15 to 20. And I had never seen a squeeze like that. Now there's seemingly one like that every month. But, you know, I didn't get out and I tried to fight my way out of it. And that was the costly error. So, you know, when in doubt, get out. And that's the big lesson.
Right. So once this trade was, you'd covered, you were out, it was kind of booked. I mean, how did you feel at the time?
Yeah, it was a little traumatic at the time. I remember walking back, just thinking, replaying it, and I definitely felt a little bit down, but I kind of worked it out with the firm over the next few days where they would just cut my split and as I chipped it away. So that really helped my psychology as well. And, you know, instead of getting my normal split, they'd just pay me out 10% and the rest would go to the hole. And that was instrumental, I think. And, you know, I just got back up, tried to just make a couple green days, get a little confidence, knowing that was kind of a fluke thing, and learn from it. And you know, like I said, we really got into a really volatile time, I think, a couple months later, and I was able to just get out of it real quickly. So at that point, I think I kind of hit a light bulb where, you know, things are not that bad. You lose a little bit of money, it's okay, and there'll be another day.
This might sound like a bit of an odd question, but, you know, do you think if it wasn't for those kind of, you know, taking those big hits, that you might not be the trader you are today?
Yeah, I think that's 100% true. And I think every big trader can probably point to some of those moments. I think I heard once Paul Tudor Jones won't hire people that haven't dealt with a situation like that before, because you just have to, have some bumps and bruises to build that resiliency and build that tolerance and that sort of thing. So I 100% believe that if it wasn't for those things that feel like the worst thing ever at the time, but in the end can be very instrumental in long-term success.
Yeah, as devastating it is at the time.
I'm not saying go out and just, you know, blow up an account so you can feel it, but but it's kind of inevitable if you're trading long enough.
Of course. What about in terms of any systems or processes you put in place to help build your risk tolerance?
Yeah, I mean, being at a firm, it's a lot more organized. So the way it works is we have a, you know, a stop loss for the day. And if you hit that number, you at least have to have a conversation. If it's a really special circumstance, you can maybe keep trading depending on if your mind's in the right spot. But over the years, you know, as you do better and better and you say, oh, I've proven I can make this amount, then they'll increase your stop loss. And that just, you know, can go on and on and on. So it's a little bit more organized, I think, when you're at a prop firm than it is, you know, if you're trading on your own. But that's not to say you can't organize it yourself and, you know, have your stop loss, then increase it as your account grows so that you're not risking too much of your account on any day or any trade.
What was the process for increasing your risk each day? Or sorry, as your account grew, I should say.
The process was just chipping away at my size, hitting those goals, having, you know, record month, going to the risk manager saying, you know, next month I want to increase my stop by 10% or 15% or whatever it is. And then trying to structure each trade within that. So if your stop is, say, you know, 500, maybe you're risking $50 a trade, and then your stop goes to 1,000, you'll risk $100 a trade and try to trade the same way. As it grows and grows and grows, then maybe your strategies have to adjust because scalability becomes an issue, but very systemized. And as you risk more, you really want to evaluate if you're trading the same way and if it makes sense, and you're not changing your strategy just because you have a little bit more size.
How long was it until you hit your first $1 million year?
How long ago was that? I think it took me maybe 5 or 6 years. I don't remember the exact year, but it definitely took a while.
Okay. And how did that feel at the time? Like, was that also another pivotal moment in your career?
I mean, that was a big goal I had, sure. So it felt good at the time, but you know, as with everything, it's kind of, you hit your goal, you celebrate, you maybe do something to reward yourself, and then you set another one, and it's kind of all about the chase and the process and enjoying it. So yeah, it felt good. I do remember, but it wasn't like some euphoric moment by any means.
Okay.
You've seen the headlines. Bonds are making a comeback. But if you've ever tried to invest in bonds, you know what a clunky, complicated, broken experience it can be. That's why at Public, they took fixed income and fixed it. Now you can find, evaluate, and buy thousands of bonds with an investing experience designed this century. They started at the beginning, reimagining the bond screener with an intuitive design that helps you zero in on the exact kinds of bonds you're looking for. Then they made it easier to evaluate each investment opportunity with better data in the places you need it most. Finally, they made investing in bonds as straightforward as stocks or any other asset. Add fixed income to your portfolio with corporate, treasury, and municipal bonds. Go to public.com/bondspodcast to get started. This podcast is sponsored by Public. Full disclosures can be found at public.com/bonds.
Are you a developing or seasoned day trader who trades the U.S. markets? Is the only thing stopping you from getting to the next level is having enough capital to trade? Trade the Pool is a unique online stock trading prop firm that funds stock traders worldwide. Not having to risk your own capital can help you focus on other things like making better decisions on your trades. There's no PDT rules to worry about. You got more than 12,000 stocks and ETFs to trade, long or short, and professional tools at your side. How you get funded is you show them your skills through a straightforward evaluation process. Once you pass the evaluation, you get funded and trade with their pool of money and split the profits. Don't let the lack of buying power, capital, or fear of losing your own money prevent you from taking your trading to the next level. Visit tradethepool.com/chat to learn more.
I'd be interested to learn a bit more about how you've kind of pushed the boundaries, how you've maximized your edge. You know, up to this point, we've kind of spoken about, you know, your early developments, gaining consistency, sort of growing your profitability, building your risk tolerance. But, you know, how were you able to continue pushing the boundaries? Like, what's enabled you to go from having your first $1 million year to then, you know, doing $5-10 million a year and so forth? Like, are you just doing the same things but bigger? I'm sure it's not as simple as that.
Well, you know, the thing I love about trading is you always pursue the best version of yourself, and you have that pursuit of excellence all the time. And I was always really competitive, so I wanted to be kind of the biggest, best trader at the firm. So that was something that motivated me. And then just trying to see how good I could be is another thing that motivated me. Yeah. So every year I just try to improve. And then as I've gotten, you know, over the years, then your strategies adjust a little bit. So maybe on low floats, you got to be careful about taking too much size, for example. And so now I've started to gravitate a little bit more to bigger cap stocks and doing a little bit more with options and hedging and being able to take overnight risk comfortably. So certainly, you know, my time frame has also probably lengthened quite a bit. So yeah, all those things kind of go into it, I would say.
Okay. I think possibly what I'm trying to get at here is, you know, Mike speaks quite often about breadth. Like, is that relevant to this question here?
I think that's one of my strengths, is I'm able to do a lot of things at once, but I don't think that matters that much, in that certain traders can do really well just trading a couple symbols a day. For me, I would get impatient, and it was just beneficial for me to trade more symbols so that I could, you know, not get too impulsive. And then additionally, if you do have the ability to kind of process a lot of trades at once, you're obviously making more bets. You know, trading is a game of probabilities. You want to be the casino. So the more good bets you can make, you know, the better you should do, the more consistent you should be, and the more money you should make. So that's definitely a strength and goes into it. I don't think it's necessarily pivotal, because I see other traders do great just trading a few names.
Okay. What about specific challenges you've encountered along the way, you know, while scaling? I think I may be wrong here, but I think when I did a podcast with Mike a little while ago, he made some comment about how, and correct me if I'm wrong here, you know, you were too early. Often you'd have the issue where you would be, you know, too early shorting. You like to short the front side of a move, but you'd often run into the issues where you were too early. So like, what did you do to kind of counter those issues? You know, and that's just one example, but like, are there other things? Like, did you, I don't know, I can't even think of something at the moment, but like, not just like P&L, maybe like there was something like psychological that you had to kind of push through.
Yeah. So that's actually, yeah, that's a good one, because one of the big stumbling blocks in my psychology was just being over eager. And you know, I was always pretty competitive. So if I saw, you know, a big trade setting up, then the FOMO would kick in and you'd be scared of missing it. I'd be scared of missing it. And I might do a little bit of size 1 or 2 days early. And then that would really eat into the trade. And so yeah, I've definitely made a lot of strides on that by really focusing on lowering my stress points in each trade. If I felt stressed or eager, I would really try to be on top of it. You know, additionally, I use options often if the stock is optionable, where if I'm trading front side, I'll almost never do it without a hedge. And then additionally, if I'm doing like a low float, for example, I'm almost always waiting for the backside now, because it's just not worth it, especially with what we've seen the last couple of years and how far things can go up. It's been pretty amazing. So that was a big thing, thinking about where there was any stress points in my trading and really trying to eliminate that. And I think that's been super instrumental in kind of my success over the last couple of years.
Are there other trades or other strategies which you play where you've also lowered your stress points other than just, you know, shorting parabolic stocks?
I've tried to do that across the board. Lower my variance overnight by using hedges or taking less pieces overnight. That was one thing. Just trying to have winners overnight rather than anticipating or getting in early, only take winners overnight if I'm not, you know, hedged out or something like that. I think the idea of being early is not just on a parabolic short. It's about, you know, any trade that you anticipate. So I try to kind of implement the same thing across the board rather than just on kind of parabolic shorts.
Yeah. Now, you've been trading a little over 10 years now. There's traders who have been doing this as long as you, if not longer. And most, you know, the majority here do not have comparable performance to you. How come? Like, how come you're an outlier?
I mean, that's a tough question to answer, but I think I do see a lot of complacency, I would say. You know, you get stuck in a pay the bills mode and then you just get used to it and you just go and punch the keys every day without really trying to improve. I definitely have a little bit more competitiveness than most, and so that's certainly helped motivate me. I think a mix of being competitive but being humble enough to know when you're wrong and take a step back is a combination that I don't see that often. So that's definitely one thing I think that. But yeah, I see it across people I train and across the firm where, you know, you just get comfortable and one day bleeds into the next and you're not really pushing the boundaries.
It's interesting because so complacency and getting comfortable has never really been an issue with you, because obviously you've made enough money where that could easily be the case.
I mean, it hasn't yet. maybe it will one day. I see some of my friends that were super successful losing a little motivation lately. Hasn't happened to me. I'm not saying it never will. I still love trading, and I, you know, want to push myself as much as I can, and I enjoy it. The money's never been a motivating factor. It's kind of just how you keep score in trading. It's been about trying to be the best version of yourself, trying to be the best out there if possible.
Let's get more into how you are trading today. You spoke right at the beginning, you know, you trade these little 5 cent range breakouts back in the day, but what are the sort of things that you're doing now?
I try to have a lot of different strategies and then pull out which ones are working in the current market. So I definitely do gravitate towards the short side, and those parabolic shorts we mentioned is something that I like. And, you know, the GMEs at, you know, 400 or 500, that sort of stuff is my bread and butter, I would say. But I'm doing a lot of different things. You know, for example, now I'm put on some stocks for the January effect, where maybe there's some tax loss selling at the end of the year and stocks might go up at the beginning of the year, and doing some of those trades. And I do some breakouts from daily charts and pullback trades. And if the market's really volatile, then I'll try to shorten my stroke a little bit and do more scalping around the indexes based on key levels and NYSE tick and that sort of thing. So I try to basically see wherever anyone's making money, and if it makes sense to me, I try to implement it into my game with small size. And as I get more comfortable with the setups, I'll try to just ramp those up. And that's how I've been able to kind of add different strategies and pull them out when they're relevant for the current environment.
Did I hear you say NYSE tick? What's that?
That's a common indicator people use of where this the amount of stocks upticking at once at the NYSE, I think, is. And then usually people view plus or minus 1,000 as a statistically significant, rather. That's not something I'm necessarily going to trade on, but it's just one indicator I might use while trading the indexes. I don't love trading the indexes, but when the market gets really volatile, even like it has been the last couple of weeks, that's where you got to kind of gravitate towards. And I do see another commonality, going back to your previous question, of people kind of get stuck in one strategy, and then maybe they learn something that works for a little bit and they're not working on their game outside of that. And that's something that can kind of get people stuck in the mud a little bit.
Yeah, well, let's speak about that, because that's a good point, actually. So say you have developed consistency and you're doing quite well with a particular strategy or a couple strategies in, you know, a niche or an area of the market. How do you start to build your confidence and your ability to trade other strategies?
Yeah, it kind of like what I just mentioned, is just doing it small, reaching out to people that are doing other things and learning from them and talking to them and doing it with small size, you know, making a plan, sticking to it, seeing if you can get a little bit of track record under your belt. And then once you see some success, it's a lot easier to scale things up comfortably. And the other key is looking for other things, not getting too comfortable if something's working. That's an advantage about being at a firm where you're seeing a lot of guys do a lot of different things. And so you can pick up on a lot more rather than just going about it on your own.
And all these things you've mentioned, these various types of strategies and plays, are these all discretionary, or is there some systematic aspect to it?
For the most part, I mean, I run one model. It's not a very large percentage of my P&L. I do have a lot of different filters and things like that that are giving me ideas. But for the most part, I would say 85% of, maybe 90% of my trading is discretionary. Yeah.
Okay. Could we take a few moments to go through, you know, one or two recent trade examples?
Okay, sure. Without giving away too much. So a trade that I'm in now is I'm short some AMC. I oftentimes what I'll do is as the stock's going up, I'll buy some calls and anticipate it going a little bit higher so I can kind of work into a short with a built-in stop. So that's kind of what I did with AMC. I bought 32 calls and I was shorting it over the last couple of days. And then I'm hoping that it will stop somewhere around here and turn its way down and go towards, you know, eventually its fundamental value of lower than here. So if that, I without giving away too much, that's one trade I'm in. Another trade I mentioned is for the January effect, long a little bit of BABA, because I think everyone has sold it out a little bit much. And oftentimes there's tax loss selling at the end of the year and people buy back those stocks at the beginning of the year. So that's another trade I'm in.
This AMC trade, this is, you're obviously talking about a multi-day kind of swing short here.
Yeah.
Would you be able to go into how you use options a little more? This is something we, not many traders speak about this too much, especially we haven't really covered it on the podcast too much. You're an equities trader, but you do use options for the purpose of hedging. Can you speak to that a little more? Like, I know this kind of probably plays into one of those issues you highlighted earlier where, you can get crushed by being too early, but options can help to counter that.
Yeah. What I found was that, I would do okay with options just directionally, but, options are like insurance where you don't ever really want, insurance, you pay for it each year, but you don't want something to happen. And over time, option dealers are the ones that really make money, as long as you avoid those crazy outlier events. So, yeah, that was the crux of it from the beginning. And then secondly, as you mentioned about being early, that was a big problem of mine. So I use the options to avoid that a little bit. And then I've kind of developed over time a little bit more and more on that strategy where I might, try to be short volatility on some options in certain situations if the implied volatility is really high, or maybe I'll try to be long volatility if I anticipate a range breakout, that sort of thing. But the crux of it is just risk management, where I'm pretty good, I found, at finding turning points within a day or two. And rather than having to be so perfect and picking the exact day. And then additionally, waiting for something to break so that you have a clear stop point with options, I'm able to kind of have built-in stops. And that helps me trade around positions and time things not so perfectly. So usually I can be within a few days. That's where the options really help.
Okay. This might sound like a bit of a silly question, but what's the added benefit of using options as a hedge? Like, so if I understand correctly, in this AMC example, you're shorting the AMC stock, but then you're buying option calls. So you're effectively long the options and short the stock. So you're hedged.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how come you don't just forget about the options and just wait to short the stock at a later point if you think that you're early at the time of putting on a hedge?
Yeah, I there's a couple things. The first thing is if I'm waiting for the stock to break, I'm usually going to be shorting at a lower point anyway. So if I'm trading on the options and I'm doing a little bit on the front side, maybe I'm a little bit early, but I can usually scale into the position and make up the difference in the premium by just having a better price when it turns. And then additionally, I can usually trade around the position and, use the wiggles to kind of pay for the hedge and then leave a core on for a kind of a bigger trade. And then finally, the big thing is you can sleep at night, especially as positions get larger. So you know, you always have your worst case scenario covered. And in the end, trading really is just about living to fight another day. So that's been instrumental in lowering my stress and helping me sleep better at night, and scaling up in a more controlled way, basically.
Right. Lowering your stress points. So with your hedge, do you typically make money or lose money on that?
Well, the idea is to lose money on the hedge. You know, there are times where each scenario is a little bit different, you know, and you evaluate the risk reward on a trade as the trade develops. So sometimes I'll sell my hedge and go naked short completely. Sometimes I'll sell my hedges and buy another strike up, maybe even double size. Sometimes I'll sell premium against them. So it really is very situation specific. And in the end, that's where my discretion of what I think the next most likely scenario is, and putting myself in the best situation. So that's a hard question to answer specifically. I think, yes, I'm anticipating losing on the hedge most likely.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Now, Mike often speaks about the idea or this concept of being a bionic trader, so using technology to assist your trading.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something you do quite a bit of? Like, are there custom tools that you've built out to help you?
Yeah, I have a million different things that are spinning me information, so that's certainly the case. I just try to get as many inputs as possible, and then I kind of use my discretion to sift through them. So there are some filters that look for patterns. For example, maybe something moves a lot really fast, and then I'll, you know, immediately spit that symbol out to me, and then I'll look if there's news, what's the news, and I'll try to process that, you know, and then make a decision. That's one example. You know, I have lists of stocks that are doing unusual volume, and I'll sift through those every day, things that get halted. And then other things, one layer forward of even having models that trade and enter and exit for themselves. Like I said, not a huge percentage from, you know, my P&L, but something that could grow and be more important in the future.
Last question here, Kenny. And I think this is quite fitting given the time of the year. As we're about to roll over into 2022, how do you prepare? How do you set yourself up for a great year ahead? What sort of things are you doing around this time?
Yeah, well, number one is recharging. So I'll typically take a vacation around this time, and I'll be going to the beach here for the first time in a couple of years next week. So looking forward to that and spending some of the time there to look over my numbers, see what worked, think about goals for the next year. How am I going to go about trying to hit those goals, making sure they're not too P&L focused, because so much is dependent on what the market gives you. And just making sure you're doing the things to not get burnt out, staying motivated, and putting yourself in a good place psychologically.
Do you have any idea what some of those goals may be?
You know, it's funny. I've been kind of thinking about it a little bit, but I haven't really sat down and did a proper, you know, write-up thought. But my goals are certainly shifting at this point in my career, where this year, for example, you know, with a new baby, a lot of my goals went away from taking some time away from the screens and spending more time with family and being home for all that stuff. And I actually think that's been really good for my trading, because it's just made it less important and made it so that even on a bad day, you know, the next day doesn't bleed in. A bad day doesn't bleed into the next day, rather. As far as, you know, work and goals specific to trading, I haven't really given it too much thought yet. I've kind of had a good year and been trying to just enjoy the end of the year a little bit, and then we'll figure it out here within the next week or two.
I know you said earlier that, especially earlier on, you were kind of like doubling your performance each year pretty consistently. Is that still the case?
No, that's not the case anymore. I think I've hit a point where, and I think most experienced traders hit a point where the market really dictates your P&L, and you can always improve and get better. And then if you had the same market the second time, maybe you do a lot better. But you know, the market's been really good the last couple of years, as so many people have gotten into trading. We had so much volatility with COVID. There's been a lot of stocks that have been flying crazy and providing a lot of opportunities. So there's no guarantee that that's going to continue. So that's why I said it's really hard to, I really try not to set P&L goals anymore. And I really didn't think this year would be as good as it was, but you never really know. So that's why you just try to do your best every day, push yourself. And then things kind of fall into their own.
Just one more thing I'd be curious to know about. How has your mindset and your attitude towards trading evolved as you've had more success? You know, a lot of new traders come in, they're very eager, excitable, that kind of thing. You've been doing this 10 or more years, had vast success. How's your attitude and mindset to trading changed?
Yeah, I think it's just less important now. And I think anyone that trades long enough and has a couple of years money in the bank, it just becomes a lot easier to trade and deal with ups and downs and dealing with the slumps. And it still hurts every time, but it hurts for a lot less time. And the next day is a lot easier to not make mistakes when you've been trading for a long time. So, yeah, I think through all the ups and downs, you just become a pretty level-headed, I think. And that's always been my MO a little bit as well, is just don't get too high or too low. And that has certainly gotten easier over the years as you just see more and you have more experience.
Okay, Kenny. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to do this. It's been just fantastic to have the opportunity to speak with you. I don't know why we didn't do this sooner.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you.
I know you keep a pretty low profile online. I always ask guests at the end, like, is there anywhere they can go to follow you, find out more about you? I don't know if you have an answer for this.
Yeah, I'm not a big Twitter, Instagram guy, not big with the social media.
Okay. All right. Well, once again, Kenny, greatly appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
You've reached the end of this episode of Chat with Traders, but rest assured, there are more episodes loaded with real market insight and zero hype on the way soon. So to stay updated with each great new release, subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, and we'd love it if you'd leave a rating and review. We'll catch you next time on Chat with Traders.